Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, a hard look at the Clinton Foundation as the world's largest charitable organized fraud. Who says it's a fraud? Charles Ortel. Who is Charles Ortel? He is a former Wall Street banker, having been a managing director at Dillon Reed and Newport Value Partners, and a private financial investor. In 2007, he became a whistleblower and was instrumental in bringing down General Electric after revealing GE's fraudulent overvaluing its stock by many billions of dollars to mislead its investors. For the past 15 years, Charles has been undertaking a thorough review of the financial records and collaborations and networks of Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. His analysis investigated the foundation's fundraising practices, its allies and associates, its so-called charitable interest, and its political and corporate connections both in Washington and overseas. Charles received his BA from Yale University and MBA from Harvard Business School. His weekly blog exposing the Clinton Foundation can be found at Charles Ortel, that's ORTEL.com. Nice to have you with us today, Charles.
Well, thanks for having me on, Gary.
Charles, you have called the Clinton Foundation the largest charitable fraud and scandal in the world in history, and yet the Foundation's public image in Washington and among the world's banking heads and the corporate elite continues to praise it as a major legitimate charitable organization assisting millions of people around the world. Now, it is no secret that the largest charitable organizations, such as United Way, Feeding America, American Cancer Society, American Heart Association, Save the Children, solicit huge donations and endowments in the millions of dollars for their philanthropic activities, and a large percentage of that goes directly to targeted programs and on-the-ground efforts. Rather, the majority goes to high executive salaries, managerial bureaucracies, public relations, and advertising, other administrative functions. But for the large majority of charitable organizations, huge bureaucratics aside, money is directed towards clear and specific programs in keeping with its goals and mission. In the case of the Clinton Foundation, the only thing the average person is clear about is that it is a philanthropic entity with an international scope. So what is the stated mission of the foundation, and how prevalent is it that its funding actually goes for activities or programs that are not in any way related to its stated mission? In other words, is the Clinton Foundation a truly legitimate charity and philanthropic organization? And one final caveat on this. Last year, there was a major demonstration from the Clinton offices up in Harlem. I was the only person, a journalist, who was attending. And I felt that that was rather unfortunate because the meeting was there to challenge the Clinton Foundation and Bill Clinton specifically. What happened to the money for Haiti? These were all Haitians, by the way. There were hundreds. They asked me to give a talk about this since I have a lot of people in Haiti who are doing legitimate work that I know, and I could find no legitimate work that the Clintons or Bushes or others who were down there who raised a lot of money. I, at least at that point, could not see where that money actually went to help Haitians. So somewhere in your answers, if you could address Haiti as an example of the foundation's work and Bill Clinton specifically, I would appreciate it. The forum is yours. Take your time.
All right. So let's take each of those three points, and we'll start. You raised what are the purposes of the Clinton Foundation, and what happened to the money generally, and then what may have happened in Haiti. So let's spend just a few minutes and talk about how public charities such as the Clinton Foundation actually need to be structured under U.S. state, federal, and foreign laws. So if you want to create a public charity, the first step is to form a nonprofit corporation. And when you do that, you have to state what its purpose actually is, or its purposes, what the purposes of the entity are. It turns out that the original Clinton Foundation that was formed on the 23rd of October, 1997, in Arkansas, was supposed to be a library and a research facility based in Little Rock, Arkansas. when the application to create the Clinton Foundation was as a tax-exempt, federally tax-exempt entity, was lodged with the IRS on December 23rd, 1997, it was made clear at that time that the purposes of the foundation were to be so limited. You are not, under U.S. law, by people I speak with, advisors and others, you are not allowed to form a federally tax-exempt public charity that has a suite of undefined general purposes. You're just simply not allowed to do it. And the record is very clear, the larger record that is not on the Clinton Foundation website, but that I have found scattered around the U.S. states, in many places, and internationally, that was the purpose. Not to fight HIV/AIDS internationally, not to fight climate change, not to do anything other than be simply a research facility and presidential archive based in Little Rock that was to have a financial endowment. Those were the purposes. Now, under U.S. and state and federal and foreign laws, you're not allowed to start a foundation saying you're going to do one thing and then do something radically different unless you first go to, in this case, the IRS and say, you know what, we started with the presidential archive, we started with the research facility, we've now finished that or we're close to finishing it, now we want to change. Maybe have your permission before we change. So if you seek the permission of the IRS before you change, it's possible that you might get it. But the types of questions they're going to ask you are very specific. You know, why did you change your purpose? Did you accomplish your first purpose? What makes you think that you can go and fight HIV/AIDS around the world when all you have are people who are competent to operate an archive and a research facility? So there is a long, detailed record that is available in the public domain that is hidden on the Clinton Foundation website that I have been organizing. And it's not over 15 years, but 15 months of work. It's nonetheless a long period of time that I'm laying out on my website that shows you the known history of this foundation, that it strayed from its original purposes, that it did not accomplish its original purposes, that it made numerous false and materially misleading applications to the IRS to do different things, that it may have been turned down on multiple occasions to do international work. That Bill Clinton, when you ask the question of what is the Clinton Foundation, on the many forms that you have to file, your annual reports in the states, federal ones, you have to list all your related entities. And, of course, the Clinton Foundation did not do that, nor did Bill, nor did key trustees. So the way the forms are set out, it's very difficult to track all the related party infractions and insider transactions and what are called denouement transactions, where insiders appropriate private gains created through the operations of these charities. So, for starters, the Clinton Foundation strayed from its purposes, its original authorized purposes. It did not, when it went about the process of registering each state, U.S. state, where it needs to register in order to solicit, it did not make correct, truthful, and complete applications to solicit inside individual states, which means that it held itself out to donors in those states as being legally operated when it wasn't, as being possible to get a state and local tax deduction when maybe it wasn't possible to do that. So there's a lot of technical stuff. It's all on my site. It's being summarized. There's lots more reports coming. But that brings us to the next question. What happened to the money? How do we know what would happen to the money? Well, the rules are actually, you know, I'm somebody who believes in more limited government generally. But in this area, I feel that, you know, the charitable sector is such a vital part of America, whether you're on the left, the right, you don't care about politics. People love to see charities. They love to see people, you know, the general public give of itself to do something, to get nothing personal in return. That's a very wonderful thing. And whether it's done to further what you might say are progressive causes or conservative causes or religious causes, it doesn't matter. It's just nice to see selfless charitable work. So what the IRS does is it encourages charities to be formed. And it reminds you when you set one up, and I've had some familiarity working for newly formed charities, that in order to accomplish the second step that I mentioned before, that is, you know, becoming federally tax exempt, you have to fill out a truthful application and date it and sign it under penalties of perjury. And if the IRS later discovers that you've made an untruthful application, they nail you. nail you really hard. How do they police all this? Different states have different requirements, but the Clinton Foundation was immediately large enough to require a real audit. This isn't, you know, when the IRS goes after you for tax evasion or something. This is an income statement, a balance sheet, a cash flow statement, financial footnotes, in-depth, granular reporting, explaining to people exactly what money came in, exactly what you did with the money, if you're operating internationally, making clear that in many states that you're validly authorized in every place where you operate. These are all things that the Clinton Foundation was required to do, and that it has never done, not for any period, has it ever procured a compliant financial audit. So the second answer to your question is no one really knows what happened to the money, because no one has ever had the benefit of getting an independent, competent set of accounts, not just some bunch of hacks who may or may not have the capability to go to all the many countries in the world where the Clinton Foundation is operating and double check that the money that came, from different places went only for authorized purposes, and that when it was turned around and sent to other places, that it was sent and used only for intended tax-exempt purposes. So then you get to the question of Haiti. I'm a numbers guy as opposed to, a words guy, and the numbers that are in the Clinton Foundation reports, if you add them all up, suggest that about $2 billion was sent towards the Clinton Foundation that flowed through the books of the Clinton Foundation from October 23rd, 1997 until December 31st, 2014. 2015 results will not be available until probably around November 15th, 2016. On top of those, that's a large amount of money. Even to people living here in New York, it's a tremendous amount of money. But on top of that, there's an estimate, the high-end estimate I've seen is that another $14 billion may have been sent into the care of Bill Clinton and a former, I think it's either president or prime minister of Haiti, into this interim Haiti Recovery Commission operation, which was given supervisory authority over the whole rebuilding effort from the 12th of January 2010 afterwards. But that Bill Clinton and this politician, and you mentioned the demonstrations, I don't know if this happened before or after those demonstrations, refused to provide any kind of granular, verified accounting for $14 billion. Now, Haiti, I've never been there. I've just read about Haiti and been interviewed by, various people that you know well recently on the subject, who care deeply about the situation in Haiti, understand that the long history, the many decades of suffering in Haiti, where American governments on the right, left, Republican, Democrat, may have actually conspired to make the situation worse. So here we have in Haiti, it's not far away from Miami. It's not far away from our country. But the people in Haiti, even after having gotten supposedly as much as $14 billion, seem to be worse off than they were before the earthquake. And, at the very least, people on the right and the left, who think that it's a good thing for American taxpayers to send relief and American private citizens to send relief around the world, this ought to be a test case. If with $14 billion, which in comparison to the total income of the Haitian community, which I think is more like $10 billion per year for all Haitians, including the very rich, who have a disproportionately high share of that $10 billion, we send them $14 billion, and they've got nothing left to show for it. That seems to me to be a massive scandal. And, I think we may not like the answers, but we need to learn from the scandal. What happened to that money? If money has been diverted, stolen, appropriated by people that we shouldn't have taken it in the first place, they need to be punished. If Bill Clinton and this other gentleman don't want to stand and take credit before the world for their good works, but instead have allowed billions to go missing, there ought to be some real penalties assessed against Bill Clinton and this man.
I appreciate that insight. To the best of your ability, how much has been claimed to have been received and spent, and then compare that with the figures you uncovered from your investigations? How large is the discrepancy? And speak a little about monies that have simply disappeared and cannot be accounted for.
All right. Well, that's a good question. And let me take the biggest donor, declared donor to the Clinton Foundation is an entity that most people have not heard of. I only found out about it in March of 2015. It's an entity called UNITAID, UNITAID. And that was an entity that was created in September of 2006, became fully operational in November of 2006. And the concept behind it was that various governments, principally, would agree to allow annual sums to be funneled into a central pot in Geneva that would be housed within the World Health Organization. And from this central pot, the administrators would work, of UNITAID, would work with validly constituted charities to help primarily people who live in the poorest countries of the world, i.e. the lowest annual level of income measured by the international government organizations. So it was born, the money started flowing in November of 2006. All told, I mentioned $2 billion has been declared as having been sent, received actually, by the Clinton Foundation in its existence. $600 million or so came from this UNITAID. That was by far and away the largest donor. Now, UNITAID's books and accounts are not validly audited either. They do have an audit, what they call is an audit, but it's not really done by an independent party, truly independent party. And nonetheless, they produce annual reports, which are available online, and they produce glossy annual brochures, which are also available online. From those reports, and supposedly the financials for the UNITAID books are done in U.S. dollars, on the same accrual method of accounting that the Clinton Foundation uses, you compare year by year what UNITAID says it sent towards the Clinton Foundation to the information in the Clinton Foundation reports, and you find variations in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And in particular, in the period 2007-08, when Hillary Clinton was running for office the first time as president, there's about $100 million missing. That is to say, $100 million more was declared as having been sent to the Clinton Foundation than the Clinton Foundation books show as having been received. That's the first level of the problem. The next level of the problem is that the entity that was supposed to receive this money from UNITAID is an entity called Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative, Inc., period, which was an Arkansas corporation operated primarily from Massachusetts, but operated illegally, because it never validly got an IRS approval. It never validly submitted the kinds of reports that it would have to have submitted, and it had its license to operate in its key home state where its key personnel were based. It voluntarily revoked on the 31st of March, 2008, with effect from December 31st, 2007. All this information that I just gave you and your listeners is available online. Go to UNITAID. UNITAID, just Google that with financial report and annual report. You'll see what I'm talking about on the numbers. I gave you the name of the Clinton Foundation entity. You'll see in the UNITAID reports, they show that that's the entity that was supposed to get the money. Then go on the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Attorney General Charity Bureau site, and you will see hard and fast evidence of what I told you, that this charity's license to operate was involuntarily revoked. And so there's no way lawfully that you could have transferred this money from UNITAID to the Clinton Foundation in 2008. You couldn't have done it. Yet, as I say, about $100 million more is listed as having sent to them than was received. So what happened to that money?
What evidence is there that the foundation's potentially being engaged in money laundering, and with the release of the Panama Papers, are there any connection links that can be made with this secret offshore banking operation with Clinton's personally or the Clinton Foundation? And if so, how strong are they?
All right. Well, that's another excellent question. So because there is no audit, there is no way from the outside to get into the kind of granular specificity that you're talking about of, you know, proving money laundering. On the other hand, What I have been doing in the last 15 months, once I realized that it was possible to cross-check what donors who care about doing good work disclose in their statements versus what the Clinton Foundation discloses in their statements, there are numerous massive discrepancies involving very well-known donors. So, for example, the Gates Foundation, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, private philanthropy in the world, does, for them in the main, very good reporting. It lists out every single grant and the purpose of every single grant and the recipient of every single grant, and it doesn't lump it together. So that if the Clinton Foundation in, say, 2009 got seven grants for each different entity, they'll list out lengthy descriptions of, you know, amount, purpose, etc. When you go through the exercise that I've been going through, tying off for a given year what Gates says they sent with what the numbers must be, are shown for the Clinton Foundation, they're off massively. Take, for example, and 2009-10 is a very important year when that happens. 2004 is another very important year. There's a man in Chicago called Fred Eichner, E-Y-C-H-A-N-E-R, who is very active, if not the most active supporter of Democrat and left-leaning causes. He's very active. He has his own foundation called Alphawood, and his reporting is excellent, except when you cross-check it and you discover that in 2004, Alphawood gave money to this entity I mentioned in Massachusetts, which was illegally constituted, and at a time when the Clinton Foundation was not authorized to engage in international activities. So that's a problem for Mr. Eichner's foundation and for him personally, because the grant, though not gigantic, was large in comparison to the total amount of money that his Alphawood Foundation issued in that year and subsequent years. And it wasn't authorized. The Clinton Foundation was not authorized to fight HIV/AIDS anywhere, and certainly not internationally, and certainly not in China, where it did operate starting in 2004. On the question of money laundering, what is very suspicious are when you have these internet-based campaigns where small amounts of money are taken from individual donors and then sent towards a charity. If there's no audit, you have no idea. Let's give you a simple case. If let's say $1 billion is sent towards a Clinton Foundation charity, but you have no audit and you have lax trustees, they could just as well say they only got $100 million and $900 million disappears. And there's no easy way of tracking that, short of involving, you know, the tough federal, U.S. federal agencies and Interpol and other people. There are numerous examples of what are called disaster relief charity that the Clinton Foundation is engaged in, that Bill Clinton is engaged in. There was, on January 26, 2001, an earthquake in Gujarat, India. Bill quickly became involved with a man who has subsequently served time in prison, Rajat Gupta, former chairman of McKinsey, in something called the American India Foundation. That is another example, in my view, of charity fraud. Looking carefully at their applications, their state filings, their lack of having compliant audits. That is the first post-presidential example I find of disaster relief charity fraud. Then you get to the tsunami exercise with George H.W. Bush. Again, massive discrepancies there. Katrina. There, it's Brightline case of far more money being claimed as having sent towards the Bush-Clinton-Katrina fund than the Bush-Clinton-Katrina fund numbers filed with the IRS that are hidden on the Clinton Foundation website but available in the public domain show. Then you move on to the Haiti case that we talked about. So whenever you have disaster relief charity fraud, disaster relief rather, you have people involved with operating the charities who don't use auditors, who issue confusing reports, there is a massive potential in those instances for charity fraud. And the rules since September 11, 2001, where there were, sadly, many examples of charity relief, disaster relief charity fraud, the rules have been tightened. The sentencing guidelines have been tightened. People who engage on this scale in charity fraud, in the case of the Texas Cancer Charity case, roughly $200 million, $187 million in revenues, All 50 attorneys general in the U.S. landed hard on this fraud and shut it down, punished severely the operators of a charity fund. That was only $187 million over, let's say, 5 years. This is $2 billion over whatever it is, 17, 18 years.
Can you speak, please, about the foundation's subsidiaries, such as the Clinton Global Fund and Initiative, and what and who are the major corporations or global leaders and other private individuals themselves with a history of financial fraud and criminal behavior from Clinton's background as President of the United States that are the closest allies with the Clintons and their foundation's activities?
Sure. I mean, I would guess that you and your listeners are very familiar with pledge campaigns for charities and very actively support charities. I'm sure you do. And, you know, we all understand, those of us involved in this, that if you make a donation to a charity, you better make sure that it is a charity, particularly if you want to take a deduction against your that it's registered in your state, if you're living in a high-tax state. And, you know, when you talk, let's take first the Clinton Global Initiative. That was never a charity. You know, that was an expensive party that initially started, and I think the first one, according to their books, was held in September 2005. They certainly did not obtain approval from the IRS in advance to add the notion that you would have a party in New York City. And I mean, expensive. We're talking many millions of dollars were spent on this thing to gather potential donors into a series of meetings over a short period, 2 to 3 days, where you wouldn't make a hard and fast commitment, you know, binding pledge where there are no outs. No, you'd get up on stage and you would talk expansively about what you might do. They came up with a term of art for that called a commitment to action. It's an unenforceable, you know, claim that you might help somebody with no accounting for, no independent stress testing of this. And you know, recently the Clinton Foundation actually made a very big mistake in trying to counter some of the allegations that are now swirling around it by issuing a searchable, supposedly searchable database of all of these commitments. Unfortunately, they didn't do their homework. They didn't go and look in the public domain at many press releases year by year, which they cannot now scrub from the public domain. And they show that the searchable database does not contain all the supposed commitments. There have been a number of examples of fraudsters who were honored at the Clinton Global Initiative, I think one in 2006 or 7, where somebody, you know, made a large pledge, let's call it $50 million, and several weeks later was in Rikers Island because he had no money. And he just made the whole thing up. So when you talk about, you know, you're going to make not even a pledge, but a supposed commitment to action, you have some people's claiming that they've made a $1 billion commitment to action. Well, there's no evidence of that, and there's no audit of that. And there are only a few years where there is a Clinton Global Initiative separately accounted for, and that's in 2010, 11, and 12. And the numbers for the Clinton Global Initiative in those years are minuscule and don't make sense, don't fit with the audit for the parent company. So all told, the commitments for action, they're listed there. You know, I don't know that we have enough time to even, over the course of, say, 100 hours, to go through all the different examples of questionable commitments to action. If you want one I could harp on that might be new to your listeners, I could perhaps take you through one.
Yes, please do.
All right, so recently in the news, there has been, rightly, some concern over Trump University. You know, was it properly registered in the state of New York? Did it really function as a university? Was it, you know, what sense did that make? And that was a $30 to $40 million issue. There's a much more significant problem around the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative called Laureate Education, Inc. Laureate Education, Inc. is a for-profit chain, or I should say conglomerate, that was created through a Wall Street transaction in 2006 through 2007, where a number of the insiders in this business, it was then publicly traded, known by, I think, a slightly different name, decided to take it private in a leveraged buyout transaction. So they got together, they bought out the public, they operated as a private collection of these for-profit universities and trade schools and online entities. And, of course, their timing was unfortunate. They closed it, I think, in August of 2007, just as the credit crisis was really beginning to accentuate. A lot of debt, private entity, far-flung operations, loose controls are all ingredients for disaster. So they made it through the worst of the credit crisis, and they decided to dress the thing up that it would be useful to have Bill Clinton involved as chancellor of this thing. And so it has been publicly revealed that Bill was paid for part-time work between 2010 and 2015, more than $16 million to be, quote, chancellor, whatever that means, of this entity. Now, I disagree with the Obama administration on many things, but in their targeting of suspect for-profit educational institutions, I'm all in. I think it is reprehensible to operate these schools issuing subprime loans to people who, you know, had other options but get seduced into taking these degrees, which generally don't help them. And that's just the ones here in the U.S., but this laureate operates all over the world, including in countries where you're not allowed to operate. And here's Bill Clinton taking, through their own disclosure, $4 million for this part-time job. It's a lot of money for part-time work. And then on the way out the door in January of 2013, when Hillary was leaving as Secretary of State, the International Finance Corporation, an arm of the World Bank, over which the Secretary of State's office and Bill Clinton, the Clintons through their friendships, have influence, decided to invest $150 million in this laureate. Now, laureate, when you look at its ownership structure, if you want to talk complex Cayman Island, you know, tax structures for this laureate conglomerate, you have to have a lot of experience to get through and understand what this is all about. And for the life of me, you know, this is not a gray area. This is something where somebody as smart as Bill Clinton and as smart as Hillary Clinton, with all the people around them, all the Rhodes Scholars, should have been able to look at this and say, you know, there are a lot of things we could do, but taking this amount of private income, private benefit, that Bill Clinton was an insider, not disclosing it in any Clinton Foundation forms, which you're required to do, federally, state, internationally, no disclosure of the $16.4 million private gain by an insider, then no explanation upon what basis did the IFC invest $150 million, at the time the largest single investment by the International Finance Corporation in any single company in the world in its history. Now, this, to me, is something that should have been explained. And it shouldn't have been done in the first place, but this deserves focus far more. You know, focus on Trump, focus on this 10 times as much.
Trump's school was not accredited. Was this an accredited university?
I don't believe it was.
Well, what good is any degree for those of us who have PhDs from accredited universities that has value? To have a PhD from a non-accredited is like having a PhD from a diploma mill. It's worth nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. And you see, you know, I did, you were kind enough, or perhaps you embarrassed me a little bit with my educational degrees. I like to feel that, you know, I always learn something every day, or at least I try to. I had the experience, my parents were kind enough to let me go on my junior year abroad, and I had the experience of unfortunately, ending up at two places that were really not as advertised. And when you look, as you can do it, the Laureate Education, Inc. filings that are available on the SEC website, because they're filing now to try to do a debt restructuring and maybe to go public again, you can look, experts can look at these filings, and you see an outright mess. You know, business that has way too much debt, that's out of control financially, doesn't have the kind of effective financial control. And they lay out the different diploma mills that they operate around the world. And, you know, I got to say, it's just gigantic red flags here. And, again, going back to the Obama administration going after competitors, for-profit competitors, but letting this one slide, you know, was that because the Clintons were involved with it? Was it because, you know, people gave a lot of money to both parties, but in particular to the Clintons personally, speaking fees? I'm speaking here of Cobra, Kravis, and Roberts. I'm speaking of Goldman Sachs. I'm speaking of the various big banks. You know, this to me is something that, you know, it's just a horrible example to set by somebody who was the former president of the United States and who's married to somebody who thinks that she can be the next president of the United States. I mean, it's just a gross dereliction of duty.
I would agree with that. I would add one additional insight. When you're a person such as Bill Clinton, you do not make unilateral decisions before you speak with people. And he has at least 1,700 people that he and his wife brought into Washington to be in the permanent structure. Every president can hire a certain number of people to fit into various departments, generally as policymakers, Department of Energy, the Food and Drug Administration, National Institutes of Health, the Surgeon General. They make these appointments. And these are people who are called stay-behinds. That means that they don't leave. So that if you're trying to build a dynasty and you've had 8 years where you hired thousands of people who are stay-behinds in every single department of government, then you at any given time have access to circles of knowledge, insight from technocrats, from the so-called best and brightest. These are generally Ivy League, more often than not, individuals who go to Washington, spend time there, then go back into industry, spend time there, then go back into the government when it suits them, but they always have an open door because everyone knows that this is a powerful person. It might have been a lobbyist, might have been a former legislator. So Bill Clinton would not have become, in my opinion, a chancellor of a school. And the chancellor is the highest position, higher than a provost, higher than a dean, higher than the president of a university. This is the ultimate authority. Without first having consulted with his own personal attorneys, attorneys for the foundation, and these are considered the, you know, the white glove attorneys of Wall Street. These are $1,000 an hour attorneys who would have told him this is a good move, this is not a good move, and clearly someone would have seen in 2 seconds of checking on the internet this was not an accredited group. So you do not associate with a non-accredited group, especially if you're going to be soliciting money. And then what in the world would $150 million come be given to when they don't give non-interest loans? They don't give you gifts. The International Monetary Fund does not do that. Like the World Bank, you have to pay it back. And otherwise, you end up with some form of structural adjustment. So that to me raises some red flags. Next up, do you have any evidence at all that any of the people in the foundation in any way engaged in money laundering or criminal behavior?
Well, let's take criminal behavior first. The way it is a felony crime in the United States and in individual states to solicit the contributions to an entity, public charity, using the mail, using telephones, using digital media, while financial disclosure forms remain in the public domain that are false and materially misleading. It is a felony crime, and it is a hard-time felony crime to do that in connection with disaster relief fundraising. So there is abundant evidence of that type of criminal activity in the public domain. Money laundering is a tougher one to do from the outside. There are rampant red flags of financial fraud in the public disclosures. Why do I use that phrase? The accountants that I come out of, I'm not an accountant, but I'm trained in finance and investing. Accountants write memos and have regulations that actually lay out the signs of fraud. One of them is called considerations of fraud in financial statement reporting. I excerpt from that, maybe I think it's Exhibit 3, General Exhibit 3 on my site from, I believe, November of last year. I excerpt some of that for people who are really interested in details as I am. There are numerous red flags that should have led state, federal, and foreign regulators to pounce on the Clinton Foundation and frankly eject the current trustees, all of them, including Bill and Chelsea, and seize control of this foundation with conservators who would then look and see and understand what is the true state of this thing. Once you're on the inside, Once you have access to the actual financial accounts, the real bank accounts and everything for every part of the Clinton Foundation, then you can establish money laundering very easily. People may not know this, perhaps you do, Gary, that when you have more than a small amount of money for a foundation, I think it's individual, I think it's $10,000 in total, in foreign accounts. So if you have taken together the value of all your foreign accounts is more than $10,000, I think it is, you have to file these forms where you lay out each account, the purpose of each account, who has control over each account, what country is it in, what is the high balance during the year, the low balance, the average balance, the starting balance, the ending balance. When the information in those forms must be true and accurate, and if there's an error, the fines are prohibitive. So they filed these forms. They either filed these forms or they didn't file the forms. If they didn't file the forms, they're in serious trouble. If they filed the forms, you can then cross-check those forms against the accounts, account by account. And that's how you get the money laundering issue. There are massive variations there. They're sunk.
Right now, with Hillary running for president and campaigning on what she believes is her excellent record of serving American interests as Secretary of State, my foremost concern is how much did she serve the public, or how much did she serve herself, her husband, her daughter, and their network of private cronies? And here I'm referring to Hillary's subtle or persuasive fundraising on behalf of the foundation while she served as the nation's Secretary of State by soliciting foundation donations from Russian businessmen, members of Qatar and Oman and Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates, and of course Saudi Arabia, and the uranium business deal with the Kazakhstan and others, a businessman, in exchange for State Department foreign policy perks and deals and sales, and also the fact that she had more weapon sales under her tutelage than any other Secretary of State in history, including those during the Vietnam War, the Korean War, and in fact, during the Iraqi war. So speak on this dual role of Hillary playing in the State Department, representing both the nation and her husband's personal financial interest, and how should this be viewed as possibly illegal or utterly corrupt and the betrayal to the public?
All right, I don't know how much longer I can stay on the line trying to answer all these great questions, but let me do my best. And as to separating her personal and then her personal interest from the interest that should have been served, advancing America's role around the world, when it became known by the incoming Obama administration that Hillary might be under contention to be Secretary of State, efforts were promptly made. I believe the first draft of the supposed legal agreement regulating these potential conflicts was signed by Valerie Jarrett, from memory, November 16th, 2008. And that was drafted as what's called a memorandum of understanding. Now, surface level, when you hear that, I'm not a lawyer, but I've been told by expert lawyers, I have some experience with this, a memorandum of understanding by design is seldom legally enforceable. And in this case, it was a joke, complete legal non-document. When you read it carefully, it's available online. Your listeners can look for themselves, and they will notice a few things. The first is that the document purports to be an agreement between the Clinton Foundation. Remember, November 16th, 2008, when Valerie Jarrett signed it on behalf of the Obama administration, and the transition team of the incoming Obama administration. So the entity... The signing entity to this unenforceable document did not include Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was not a trustee of the Clinton Foundation in 2008. He didn't become a trustee until 2013. So he's not a party to this. Therefore, he's not prohibited, the way the document is drafted, from doing anything that people should have cared about him doing while Hillary was Secretary of State. In addition, the Obama transition team went out of existence after the inauguration. So that's not a surviving entity either. There are drafting errors in the document. So when you look at it, you know, harshly, ask yourself, was this document ever meant to do anything? It says in the document, this is the only document regulating the Clinton Foundation conduct while Hillary is Secretary of State. Well, it's a nonsense. It doesn't have any teeth. And while Hillary was there, there was no Secretary General, I don't believe, Inspector General over the State Department. There was no regulatory mechanism. There were no audits. There was no way to know. So, you know, one wonders, was this set up sloppily? I mean, did the Clintons have all the experience of 8 years having been president? Incoming President Barack Obama had a lot of potential, but no hard experience as president. So, you know, did the Clintons take advantage of the Obamas in setting this thing up? Or alternatively, you know, was this just never really meant to be regulated? So there was no contractual, legally enforceable contractual arrangement regulating the behavior of the Clinton Foundation while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. Now, there are, of course, many state, federal, and foreign laws dealing with insider transactions, that is to say, operating a public charity such as the Clinton Foundation and its different constituent elements in ways that create more than an insubstantial private gain. Most people don't know, and I know this through close work, and you can see it for yourselves, that a charity may not be operated to create more than an insubstantial amount of collective private gain. What does that mean? It's been held in various court decisions that the threshold is $1,000. A charity is supposed to be a charity, not a way to make money. And so the first issue is you're not supposed to create substantial private gain, but more importantly, you're not supposed to operate a charity so that insiders, substantial donors, people who create the charity, the Clinton family, trustees, are not supposed to derive and appropriate private gains. You look at these big donors. You look at Ron Burkle. Look at, you mentioned Frank Giustra. When you're talking about, I think Frank Giustra and the Uranium Project and some of his other projects. I mean, there are many, many hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars of private gain have been created through the operation of this charity. Bright line illegal. So then on the question of weapon sales, that's a little bit tougher to pin. You can look at the sales by the United States of weapons, and you can, as you've done, compare trend lines over long periods of time. The tougher one there is to prove that a donation to the Clinton Foundation influenced American policy, because Hillary Clinton is not the only person who would have been involved in decisions to sell weapons. So that might be a slightly tougher one to go down that way than to go down the track of saying, you know, were private gains created through operation of this charity, and who among the Clinton Foundation insiders might have benefited? That, I think, is easier to prove and clearer. But both are concerning.
Final question that I believe a lot of people are interested in, who at least have an awareness of the Clinton family, and that is Hillary Clinton's son-in-law, the man who married her son or her daughter, Chelsea Clinton. And I observe the Clinton Foundation acting as the dominant capitalist playing card that finds ways to capitalize off a domestic or international crisis and misery, particularly in undeveloped nations or wherever a dire economic crisis due to some kind of catastrophe has occurred. Haiti is the most frequently mentioned one, but we've covered that, and where the Clintons further destroyed the nation while reaping huge rewards. And Greece remains a huge crisis, and hedge fund vultures try to capitalize on the disaster, and the foundation has some kind of activities going on with Greece. And in 2015, the Clinton Global Initiative held its annual meeting in Athens, and earlier this month, Clinton's son-in-law, Mark Mavinsky, and his Greek hedge fund lost 90% of its value. What do we know, if anything, about the relationship between the foundation, Goldman Sachs, and their son-in-law, and the financial hedging either through Chelsea's husband or other large investment firms such as Goldman Sachs? or individual private investors?
Well, that's a good set of issues to get into, and I'll try to be brief because it's a big topic. I mentioned earlier that when the Clinton Foundation was formed, its original purpose was to be a research facility and archive and to have an endowment. Now, in New York State, where I live, and I'm more familiar with New York law than other state laws, the rules on a foundation operating and having an endowment are incredibly strict. And there, what people are concerned about in New York, where, you know, there's a lot of high income, there are high taxes, and a lot of wealth, is that a foundation would improperly attract money, stating that it was going to put incoming funds as an endowment and instead use it for operating expenses or even waste it or spend it on travel, or who knows what. So the first set of problems that the Clinton Foundation has in its filing is that they have not made complete and accurate state filings in places like New York concerning how endowment monies came in and where those endowment monies may have been lodged. Now, in the case of the endowment campaign for the Clinton Foundation, it was led by a man called Dennis Cheng, C-H-E-N-G, who until he embarked on this process of raising money for the endowment, had been the deputy protocol officer at the State Department. So the first question would be, for trained investigators, how many of those names that he was able to capture in his role serving all Americans as deputy protocol chief, how many of those names and contact information tidbits were sent over to the Clinton Foundation and were harvested to attract money for the endowment? Step one. Step two, as the endowment came in, why aren't the inflows more clearly segregated? There's a material amount of money supposedly came in, $250 million. And why is the accounting so sloppy in the parent company? And why is there no audit? Why is there no, you know, who are the independent trustees for the endowment? And were they truly independent? Then once the money was collected, how was it decided who would manage the Clinton Foundation endowment? Were truly independent parties brought in to assess who ought to get that $250 million, if that's the right amount that came in, which hedge fund company, whether it's going to hedge funds or less risky or you name it, who made those decisions? Where are the records of that? How come those aren't explained in the financial footnotes? And there are press reports that one of the groups that may have been involved helping the Clinton Foundation, and specifically Chelsea, think through some of these issues, was a firm that is related to Chelsea and to Mark. Now, you know, this is the kind of disclosure that really needs to, the mainstream press, on a $250 million endowment issue involving potential conflicts of interest in the Clinton Foundation. This is a real set of issues that should be gone in great depth, particularly as we're talking New York State activity, New York State and city activity. So, not enough work has been done. As I say, there are no audits for the Clinton Foundation, no compliant audits for the Clinton Foundation. So, I mean, they have a lot of work to do to try to get this thing into compliance. And to answer your questions, they would have to amend multiple years of filing, and they would have to fess up what really happened. Who are these related party transactions?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen unless they're taken to court. Charles Ortel, we're out of time. Thank you very much for coming on and sharing your insights. It opens a door that people did not know what was on the inside of Clinton Foundation, only what the pro-Clinton media chooses to share about them. More information from Charles' website, Charles Ortel, ORTEL.com. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Nall. You've been listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
it hurt me so to let you know. When I look in your eyes, you're letting me know how you feel. Let me know if the love is really real, but it seems to me. Stay.